So, Dodie, you're going to love this one. My inner 6-year-old is like bouncing up and down to tell you about this.
Oh, are we going to talk fungus again?
No, we are not.
Okay. Are you sure that I'm going to be excited to hear this?
Yes, you definitely are.
This is going to be Connor's favorite. Poop and microbiomes?
No.
Crabs?
Not algae and slime, not the crabs. Well, actually, that's pretty close. It's bugs. It's insects.
So much joy in childish things.
I know. That's what happens when you let curiosity off the leash. No, look, seriously. We've talked a lot about how biotech is finding ways of making better therapies and at the same time replacing less sustainable raw materials using, poo and algae and fungi and crabs that actually aren't really crabs. And this time I want to talk about insects as biotech engines, and they could replace less sustainable technologies in the production of medicines and food.
Yum. Okay, I'm all in for bugs and eating them.
That's what matters.
On today's episode
of Discovery Matters.
First of all, insects are very, very efficient producing proteins. Consider that every year around 80,000 tons of silk thread is produced by silkworms. And silk thread is composed by two proteins. It means that the insects are huge in production of proteins in general. And insect cells are able to produce more than 1,600 times protein than the most productive mammalian cells.
So this is José Escribano, the founder and chief scientific officer of Algenex. His background is veterinary medicine, and his company was born out of a collaboration with a group in the US while he was looking for a better way to make vaccines in plants instead of in animal cells. And that's technologically complex and not very cost effective for animal vaccines.
Veterinarians are practical people in terms of solve problems. My group visualized from the beginning that we need to create new vaccines in a more easy way. We started to work in plants as biofactories, living biofactories.
So Jose started off looking into plants. I thought we were talking about insects.
Yeah. So the exam question is, how do we grow large quantities of recombinant protein? And by one of those happy accidents that we love so much on Discovery Matters, Jose was contacted for some help.
One laboratory in the States asked me for one recombinant baculovirus to produce one protein for diagnostic purposes. And they mentioned that they're going to produce the recombinant protein in insects. And then I accepted to send the recombinant baculovirus. They sent to me some insects, frozen insects, to realize how is the productivity of the system.
And these frozen insects are so productive in expressing protein that Jose immediately switched from plants to working in insects instead.
So a chance conversation and collaboration led to the start of a whole new process of using baculovirus to introduce genetic material into insect cells to make them create vaccines.
Yes, it's brilliant, isn't it? In fact, it was the cabbage looper moth larvae, and they ate all of my garden kale this year. They become like tiny little bioreactors.
It must be said, I think those things were doing you a favor by eating your kale.
I like my kale. It's green and roughage. It's good for your microbiome. While we're on the topic of chance discoveries and insects, here's another one.
I had a colleague working on insect protein. She extracted the protein and she used the fat or the oil just to weigh how much was it. And then one day I saw her throwing away the fat into the bin and I was like, no, oh my God. Because I use that to do all type of chemistry and physical analysis. So I thought, okay, why don't we work together? Yeah, you continue your work and you give me the fat that you don't use.
Insect fat? They're too small to have fat. What? What is that?
Cool, huh?
My name is Dailan Tsompa. I am currently researcher at Ghent University at the Department of Food Science, Health and Safety. I have been working with insects now for about 10 years, specifically on the part of fat. Lipids and fat. So to make it more layman's terms, oils and the fat that you have that you can use at home. My training is in agricultural engineering and I am animal scientist. But my PhD, so my specialty is on milk fat and it's chemistry.
So Dailan's PhD supervisor said she could take on this fun project.
Fun.
And she found that there was a lot of interest in the topic. And for Dailan, it's just a matter of translating the knowledge she acquired as a milk fat specialist into a new source of fat, and that was the insects. And these insects were a new source of oils and lipids that could be used in food.
So you're telling me the chemistry has got to be similar. Insect fats, similar to other sources of fats, like vegetable fats, animal fats. But why?
Okay, yeah, sorry. Got a bit ahead of myself there. It turns out that ignoring insects because of the kind of ick factor
and
that we have.
And it is a big ick factor.
Yeah, I mean, as a source of materials, they can be pretty amazing. Insects make up more than 50% of the animal biomass on the planet. And they're a sustainable and really efficient source of fat and protein when you compare them to, for example, you know, conventional livestock. And they're really highly nutritious.
So they're everywhere and they're sticking around.
Exactly.
So get used
and they've
to
been
them.
Around forever. And, you know, the interesting thing about this is that nature has evolved over millions of years to solve a problem which we're trying to solve using technology. So we're kind of backwards engineering nature. And nature has solved this problem already.
That's amazing.
But Dailan is looking into insect fats as food ingredients, and that means she needs a deep understanding of their chemical and physical characteristics and how they function.
There are thousands and thousands of different species of insects. So some of them can have a very high content of omega-3 fatty acids. Until now, to my knowledge, there are no insect species that we have studied that can get so high, because omega-3 fatty acids in the fish oil, it's 40%, and sometimes are like super, super high percentage. One of the insect species that we studied now and is that commercially available is Tenebrio molitor. In larvae stage, they have about 1.5% of omega-3. You see, we will never get to 20%, 30%, 40%. But that said, it's only with the insect species that we have studied until now.
So we simply need to look to insect farms for the future of food and medicine.
Yes, they could play a really important role. But of course, we kind of need to look after them properly so that we can coax them into doing exactly what we want them to do. Different insects like different environments. So back to Jose and his little tiny moth larvae bioreactors.
Part of the know-how of the company was to optimize the biology of this process. The difference, for example, in temperature are critical in the productivity of the insects. The number of insects that you put in a specific surface is also important because we need to synchronize the growing of the insects in order to get to the pupa stage, which is the production unit, at the same time. All the insects reared in the same rearing box. All of these things, of course, part of the technologies has been patented. For example, the rearing boxes, the robots, also the trays in which we put the pupae, which are compatible with the inoculation robot.
So Jose and his team have mastered the cultivation of the moth larvae at scale, and then, of course, using the baculovirus to transfect the cells to make the medicines that they want.
So the production of recombinant proteins is happening in the insect pupae form.
That's right, yeah, because Jose and the team can keep millions of cells in a perfect physiological balance in that form, and they deliver the instructions to the cells in the pupae using the viral vector.
And what's even more exciting, earlier this year, in the summer, the European Medicines Agency and the UK regulator validated an animal vaccine made based on Algenix's technology. It's paving the way for the potential use in human health applications as well.
And the insect that we are using is the natural target of this baculovirus in nature, okay? And then it means that all the cells from the insect are really infected by the vector that we had genetically modified in the laboratory. And then we insert different genes in these vectors. We infect the pupae by an automated process by robots. And then after 4 to 5 days, we have all the cells already infected by the vector and producing the molecule that we want.
This is so insanely sci-fi. Now I understand why you were jumping up and down to tell me all about this. Robots inoculating insect pupae for the production of recombinant proteins in these teeny tiny bioreactors.
It's just so super cool. It's beautiful, isn't it? It's like a mashup of The Matrix and Blade Runner 2047 and Alien all in one. But without like the horrible dystopia bit.
So what about Dylan? Is she using pupae as well for the fats?
Not quite, but it does rely on the juvenile phase of the insect, a worm or larvae phase that grow from pupa into adults. And it's in the larval phase where they have the highest content of fat because, well, they're just like little eating machines, nom, 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 accumulating energy for, you know, metamorphosis.
And now we're into the very hungry caterpillar, everybody's
favorite childhood. I know, back to my six-year-old, okay.
Exactly. And why are they so good at making fats?
To make a fair comparison, in milk fat, we have 4% of fat in weight basis. And in wet basis, we have 12% of fat in insects. So it's at least threefold more the amount of fat in the insects. Similar to what we have in seeds.
Okay, so let me try to restate and just level set here. We've got our insects. We get them at the right phase in their life cycle. And we use them as factories for fats or medicines. Long term, what are we talking about? What is the opportunity?
Well, look, no one technology is going to solve all the problems in biotech production, whether it's food or medicine or what have you. Insect cells just can't compete with the productivity of mammalian cells, for example, when it comes to making monoclonal antibodies. But vaccines, yes, because there, it might not be about productivity. As we've learned over the last couple of years, it can also be about speed.
I think we can provide many advantages. Also stockpiling. We can generate an insect biomass containing the recombinant molecule, freeze this biomass, and keep frozen for more than 2 years. And at the moment that you need a new vaccine or this diagnostic reagent, whatever, you can just do the downstream from this insect biomass and produce the molecule in less than a week. And the stockpiling of this insect biomass is very cheap. The most expensive part of generating a biotechnology product is the downstream. It's a conventional technology. We can apply conventional technology to do the downstream of the molecules using our platform.
So Jose is still working on veterinary medicines, but what about human therapies?
Well, like any other medical intervention for humans, we want the regulatory hurdles to keep people really, really safe, right? So in proteins for chronic diseases where people are being injected all the time, you really need to ensure that if you make a biologic drug in insects, it really has exactly the same structure and characteristics and capabilities as the original technology that was used for the production and is of the same quality. But interestingly, when it comes to vaccines, this original mirroring is not quite so important.
For vaccines, it's not so relevant because it's a single suit or a couple of suits. And then the function depends mainly on the conformation of the protein. The other thing that we need to demonstrate is that we are getting a protein free of any adventitious agents or any protein or compound that may produce allergic reactions to the patients receiving the vaccine.
So Algenix purifies the molecule, makes sure that there's nothing foreign in there. But it also sounds like in the process, Algenix is solving a lot of the upstream issues in terms of scale. So this solution for upstream issues allows scientists to focus on downstream.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Algenix doesn't have issues associated with upstream bioreactor bags and cell culture media and so on. They can focus on the purification of the protein soup, essentially, that comes out of the moths.
So if anybody's been paying any attention at all this year, we understand how making a like-for-like vaccine or biologic should be regulated, should be safe, needs to be tested. And if you switch manufacturing from conventional bioreactors, those big stainless steel vats, to moth larvae, but if you're replacing actual insect fat into foods, are the fats the same? What does that even taste like?
Yeah, you see, that is a super sharp question because that is exactly what Dailan is focused on. How do you replace conventional animal fats like lard, for example, with insect fats? So remember she said that each insect species has its own makeup and percentages of fatty acids and sugars and proteins and what have you. That gives each lipid from each insect a different taste. Now, her favorite oil is made from the mealworm.
Every insect lipid has a specific smell. Other ones have a different smell, like for instance, the mealworm oil. For me, has a smell like pork fat. It's lard, the correct name. But it's like when you fry pork meat in its own lard. And then for a long time. I'm from Mexico. In Mexico, we have a traditional dish that has exactly that smell, and I love it.
Okay, I don't have a favorite oil personally. That's kind of cool to hear.
And it's not like essential oils.
Right.
It's not like a MLM marketing
or
thing.
Or olive oil.
Or olive oil, no.
Okay, but she's describing a pleasant animal smell.
That's correct, but cockroach apparently tastes like vomit.
Predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I'll take the mealworm's aroma. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, why not? A mealworm, it even says it in the name, right?
Yes, it does.
Meal.
Truth in advertising.
Indeed. So look, these lipids, they can be used to produce a huge range of foods. So after deodorization, which reduces some of the smells, the oils can be used to make hummus and crackers and donuts. And you can fry dough using this oil or potato chips, and you can make muffins.
All things that we enjoy. But each one of those foods must require different lipids. If every application requires a different type of physical property, if I'm following this all the way down.
Exactly. So, you want a hard fat at some point and a flowing fat at other point and so on. So for croissants, you need a hard fat and you can basically use that in any food application if you have the correct physical properties. And the fats and the proteins are already being produced in huge quantities and there's very little waste from this process.
There's nothing left. Everything is used from the insect. If you separate the protein-rich fraction and lipids, then both of them have applications. There's the chitin part, so the exoskeleton of the insects, it's also used to produce chitosan, which is also a molecule that is used, has different applications. Even the poop of the insects, that is called frass, that's also used for fertilizers.
So the fact that these lipids can have almost any application in food, who knew? I mean, this could be really useful in so many different ways.
Fascinating. Now we've gone from silkworm production in the time of the Silk Road to now. Insects are just like They're the bee's knees, so to speak.
They are the bee's knees.
I had to
exactly
do it.
Good. But it's just extraordinary, isn't it? Because what's happened is that we've, in the age of biology, instead of trying to work out how to make things using chemical synthesis, we've gone back to nature and we're using nature's evolutionary development to, essentially reverse engineer biology and use the biological processes to make what we need. It's just extraordinary.
Why have we resisted so long?
I know. Nature's had billions of years to sort this out.
Listen to your mother, people. Listen to your mother.
Listen to mom. And on that note...
Discovery Matters executive producer is Andrea Killen and was produced with the help of Bethany Grace Armit Brewster. Editing, mixing, and music and sound by Thomas Henley, soon to be a papa, and Banda Productions. My name is Dodie Axelson, people.
My name is Conor McKechnie, and my mum, who I always listen to, is doing the ironing. Make sure you give us a rating on the platform you use to listen to us, and thank you so much for listening.
Hey, do insects go now on your list of new obsessions?
They do. Bugs are on the list.